Good evening and welcome. This is Andale Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star. Wish Upon a Star is a dynamic radio program spotlighting talent in the arts arena with discussions of the challenges and some advice in making it in the visual, musical, literary, painting, and performing arts. As a unique part of the show, we will interview professional guests. These are experts in the fields of community development programs, entertainment law, copywriting, studio recording, publishing, and promoters. And today, our guest, ladies and gentlemen, is right in the middle of all of that. He is Jesse Powers Jr., music educator, bassist, and sound engineer. Let me give you his biography. In the beginning, Jesse states, and I quote, "Music is a composite of inner visions, sounds, and melodies that originate from the depths of the human imagination and resolves, leaving a spiritual impression on the hearts and minds of mankind," unquote. His biography. Jesse was born in Fort Eustis, Virginia. He dedicated 34 years of continuous service on active duty in the United States Army. After his distinguished service, Jesse retired from the U.S. Army Field Band, Office of the Chief of Public Affairs in Washington, D.C. After this retirement, his professional music career began in 1971. When he volunteered to join the U.S. Army as a professional euphonium and trombone player in 1973, teaching himself to play also the electric bass. Other areas of experience in his military career include serving as a human relations specialist, which became known as Equal Opportunity. These and other related programs, Jesse states, are a testament to the U.S. Armed Services' commitment to equality for all service members. A further interest of Jesse's musical education was to include completing the basic and advanced music courses at the Joint Expeditionary Base in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Through the years, Jesse has continued his music ship while taking it upon himself to perfect the canon of musical literature that all of the masters before him had successfully embraced. Jesse's successful musical career awarded him the opportunity to be involved in numerous musical and performances in every state of the Union, including Alaska and Hawaii. His touring legacy didn't stop there. He toured abroad in Portugal, Mexico, Germany, Belgium, Luxembourg, France, Cuba, and Nicaragua. And if that wasn't enough, he formed a band in 1988 called Spice. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I am going to stop right here before the show will be over, and we never get into questioning Jesse how all this passion was rooted. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for having me, Andale. Thank you.
Great. We're going to go right into the questions, and like I said, you can actually elaborate on them in any way that you would want to. So these are just some questions. I don't know anything about guitar, bases, anything. So I think some questions that our audience just might want to hear, which you, of course, are the expert. Like I was going to say, so let's start with our audience. May already know the answer, but in your opinion, Jesse, who has been credited in somewhat or in some way in making the bass guitar an intricate part of music composition and performance?
That's a very good question. I don't know the particular history as far as how far back it goes, but For me, oh my goodness, it actually started really in the Army. My father was a musician as well. He was an organist, and he had his own sort of like a small big band, if you will. And I really wasn't focusing that much on the bass, just listening to the overall, because I really didn't know exactly where I would fit. I just liked the music. But when I joined the military, what brought me to the bass guitar was actually the commander needed someone in the band to take up that instrument, because at that time, back in 1972, I guess it was, 71, the military did not have a military job status for bass players, which was really crazy. That was the one instrument that they didn't have. But we were still trying to have big band rehearsals and what we call stage band or big band. So he just asked someone to volunteer to learn that particular instrument in conjunction with everything else we were doing, which at that time was trombone and euphonium. So he asked me to learn it. And I said, well, I'll try it. What the heck? You got to have it. You know, how bad can it be? So what the heck? I'll try it. And well, the rest is history.
I saw some old movies, and like I said, I didn't pay that much attention to the band, but you're right, they didn't even have a guitar or whatever in the band. It was mostly, you know, horns and that sort of thing. So your early stage of playing the bass came from the Army. Maybe a lot of our young people in the audience are going into the service, and possibly they could take part in that to make their life more enjoyable while they're in the service. Did you mainly want to concentrate on jazz, or did you want to perform other genres or types of music?
Again, didn't know at that particular time. All I knew was that they needed a bass player, and I volunteered. So at that point, it was just jazz because it was big band type stuff. And it helped that I could already read, so I just had to just kind of like move my mind to a different way of playing the notes and a different instrument, just learning the instrument itself. And that's kind of like how it started for me. And then I ended up listening to other genres. Now, I grew up listening, of course, don't get me wrong, I grew up listening to this, you know, I used to love the Supremes and the Four Tops. And, I mean, I absolutely adored all that music. And not just that, but the Rolling Stones. I mean, everything was hitting me at that time. And I just, you know, the music moved me when I was a kid. So just, all this transformation just gave me a chance to be a part of this whole music scene and, you know, find my niche, if you will, in a way to be a part of this music. So it was jazz, and then I started listening to like all the other groups. So back in that time, 71, I was Earth, Wind, and Fire, and all that stuff was out there. So I was just picking up I was just like a sponge. So I was learning the instrument, learning how to play the jazz. So I had the concept of the jazz, and I also had the concept of the other styles too, the rock styles or R&B. So it was all coming at me, and I wasn't backing down. I was taking it all.
Excellent. And that's also another good point, and I'm taking notes so that at the end of the show we can reiterate what you just said, that even though you were in the Army and you played the trombone maybe in some of the other, but it's good to know other instruments and other types of music as well.
Okay,
that's a very good point. Now we're going to come to the wonderful part of life, being in the service. I know the servicemen, don't they go from different cities and states and countries and all that. So let's say playing with many renowned artists and musical giants from around the world, I know, can sometimes make you want to pinch yourself when you meet certain people to see that this is really true. I'm playing with this particular person. Tell us, what are some memorable instances that made you want to just pinch yourself, Jesse, from the pure opportunity to be in that particular genre?
Oh, wow, you're making me think hard. Now, that's a good question. I mean, I remember meeting, Tina Turner. We opened up for her in Hawaii. Who else was out there? Nancy Wilson. And that's the switch from Tina Turner to Nancy Wilson. There was another artist. She had a hit I'll call it, if it don't fit, don't force it. I think her name was Kelly Patterson, came up from California, and I backed her back then, back in the 70s, and actually from that job, from I think one of her, either her producer or who her was inviting me or trying to entice me to, when I could, to, you know, to get out of the military and come to California as a recording artist. But I was kind of, wasn't moving too fast, I should say that. I'm still early in my career, and we're talking like 1976. So I wasn't even ahead. And plus, I was married and I had kids, so whatever I did affected, you know, the entire family. So I couldn't have this, couldn't go at everything but a, sort of like a selfish attitude. Whatever I did, it had to be good for me and my family. So, and I didn't think that was a good move. So stuck with the military. But then there's other people like Toots Thielman, if you know him, the great jazz harmonica player. You've heard of him? No?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sure I'm leaving some people out, but there was just a lot of great, great players that ran across. Lee Greenwood, I ran his band on the road. And it was so funny. They did their thing out. They thought the band was fabulous, and which they were. And on the break, we went. They invited us to my band, Army Band. Yeah, you know, come and hang out with us on our tour bus, which we did. Yeah. And I went inside, and we were listening, and they were playing R&B. Here we got a country band. And all they were listening to, I said, guys, what's going on here? You know, you listen to R&B. And they were like, man, we're all jazz musicians doing this Lee Greenwood gig. It's, you know, this is where our heart really is. Listen to this jazz. And that's what you find. You find people who do certain jobs, but their real love is a totally different genre of music. But they still, you would never know it to listen to them on the stage. And this is part of what I learned in the military, is just approach every style, every genre of music with genuineness. Be genuine to it, you know, be true to it and feel it, understand the concept. And that's a thing that really helped me to broaden my scope and not to be afraid to do anything. And actually, I'm always encouraged, whatever it is, I'll play it, you know, country, you know, because I started out as classical. That's what I started out as, a classical musician.
But exactly.
You know, I played everything, so it's all good. It's all good.
Yes, and if we think about it, back in history, mostly all of it came from a certain nucleus, and that nucleus was gospel, country.
Mm-hmm.
When the slaves were on the off-field, and they will, you know, start singing that jazz, but they were messages. Mm. They were sending messages. Mm. So all of that came from the same. So we can, from the spike of the wheel, have country, classic, jazz, R&B. Mm. And if you notice, since you know music very well, you can hear the beat and where it originates from.
Right.
So that's another point that our audience members who want to get into the music field, you need to know a little bit about all of that, because you never know.
Right.
On that same token of thought, many musicians in the past became known without the knowledge of knowing how to read music. In your opinion, in today's music arena, what is your position? Should musicians know how to read music?
Yes, you should. I always encourage them, young people and young musicians, especially when I see just phenomenal talents out there, very, very talented people out there.
Yeah.
And then when you put a piece of music in front of them, and then they're completely lost. And that's, I just think you're selling yourself short when you just don't learn the music thoroughly. Learn it all. Learn how to read it. Learn how it's put together. Because you never know what you'll need. And you need to do it anyway just to understand it, because it'll help you to facilitate do the music, whatever the style is, it'll help you. You know, otherwise, there's too many things that you would try to memorize. And we got some guys with some great memories out there. I know some unbelievable memories. But still, there comes that time where, you know, sometimes the brain is not always firing on all, depending on how, you know, tired you might be or whatever. So you need to be able to, if you have to, fall back on the music and be right in tune with everything. Now, there was a period in my military career where I had risen to a position where I was actually hiring musicians for this, or looking to hire musicians to play in the special band, which is the Army's top band. And that was the one thing that really disappointed me was, you know, people would submit their applications and their recordings, you know, but you would find that some of these people just couldn't read. And that alone would kick you out of the job. You couldn't, you know.
They couldn't read the music. Okay, let me write that down.
Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of times they bring music, you know, on these jobs, they bring you music. Sometimes I used to come to work and it would just be, okay, we're just doing the studio today. Here's the tune. And see, you never heard it before, so you have to be able to read it. And these are things that...
And it all depends on what instrument they're playing, because I know sometimes when I read music, it says this is for something in a certain flat or sharp, but it's for a certain instrument. Now, how does that vary?
There's music for everybody. Music for the drummer, for every single instrument, so nobody gets a pass on that one. So we all have to, you know your part, whether it's guitar, piano, you know, bass, or saxophone, any of the horns. There are parts for that, depending on what you're doing. So it's, again, and most of these young people on Saturday that were coming through our particular unit in the steel band, most of them had already gone to college and got their degree in music and as performers. Oh, that's my wife. Hopefully she's all right. It's just one of those things that you really should, and as early as possible, when you find a child, if you got a child that has talent, you know, certainly encourage them to enjoy themselves with that and get into it, but definitely don't leave out the reading and music part. Get them into it as early as possible. They'll love you for it, really.
Excellent. Earlier the better. Mm-hmm. Also, Jesse, you know, like I know, I only know from the aspect of getting artists to be on the radio show when I go to the different shows. But some of them, the top artists come to town. And when they come to town, just like you said, they're looking for people who can assist them so they won't have to maybe bring their entire band. They're looking in that particular area, somebody who can, like you said, put together a piece of music for them when they're playing something, if they hire you. A lot of people can lose out on a good job because of that. So you're absolutely right. So your point was that you need to learn how to read music because there may be a big band that comes to your city that needs a person to help play in the band rather than, let's say, they had a 15-piece band. They don't want to bring the whole 15-piece. But if they got somebody in your city that can play the bass, and that's what you're saying, that learning to read music would be a great help.
So that afforded me, like when little Anthony came to the Ocean City once, and I got a call to come. No rehearsal.
No rehearsal.
They call you up. The union called me up. Now, I wasn't a union member, but some kind of way, they gave me a waiver to play this show. And you just come in, and then there's a book. There's a bass book there. And I had never seen this music before. It just opened up and you know, warm up and boom, you're in the show. That's it. And a lot of these union musicians, that's just how good they are. I mean, these guys, they can play, they can read, and that's why it's good when you of that caliber to, you know, to even get in
the game.
I elected not to do it because I was in the military, so it just got to be too difficult because I was getting a lot of union calls, but I wasn't union. So every time they called me, I'd have to get a waiver, and I didn't want to do that because I'm in the military. I'm touring all the time, so it was just the wrong time to do that.
And that's another thing. I know we have a lot of young people now, because I went to hear a band, and these kids, they were like 20 years old. So that's another point you just brought up. Get a waiver. If you're not in the union and somebody mentioned your name and said, well, this guy is terrific, because I know a young guy. He's terrific. But mm-hmm. I don't know if he's in the union. So that's another good mm-hmm. point.
Yeah, that's another
okay,
point.
Okay, Jesse, mm-hmm. just briefly, what are some of the most important elements that you think of playing the bass or any musical instrument that could greatly affect a performance or career?
Elements of playing the bass.
Or any instrument.
Yeah, or any instrument. Yeah, just understand your function within the music. Within
okay.
Well, definitely you have to know your instruments. So knowing your instrument and knowing how to read all that stuff. It's discipline. And then once you get all that down, then just know what your function is one of the best elements. Because sometimes you have, you hear ensembles and it sounds like, how do I put this? They're not playing together. I mean, and everybody's talented. But it's like, you know, you don't know who to look at because it's like everybody is trying to play lead at the same time. And that's not understanding the music, or it's way, 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 way too loud, or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not it. But, you know, in this area, I mean, I guess I'm noticing in a lot of places, this is the best place to be in right here in Maryland, you know, between D.C. and New York. But there's just a plethora of just wonderful, wonderful people, wonderful musicians. And, it's you know, I've run across a lot of groups, especially as a sound engineer. I've run across such wonderful players, wonderful. It's just been a joy. It's always a joy mixing people, running sound anyway. But there's a lot of good folks out here. There's a lot of good people who understand this music very well. And it's the people in this area are really lucky to have such wonderful talent, I think. I really do.
You're absolutely right, because D.C. used to be my number one stomping ground for jazz, because mm-hmm. I always love jazz. And just recently, when I say recently, being older, I think the last 20 years is recent for me. They have started to bring that back into the inner cities now. And that leads into what you just said about the peripheral of wonderful players that's between certain New York, Philadelphia, coming on down the line. Improvisation is also one of the known things in a jazz group. And our listeners may understand to a certain degree when they hear jazz. They hear people, you know, I'm talking about classical jazz. But soloing by a bassist, does that often occur in a group performance? Like, give the bassist some.
Absolutely. That's yeah. I hear echo. Yes.
Okay.
I think they were doing that way back when, you know, A. Brown and Buster Williams and all those guys were playing. They were doing some soloing, but it really
right.
When I got into music, I didn't realize that then. I didn't realize it until I started getting into Stanley Clark.
Okay.
I started getting into Stanley and Stanley was a bit of an inspiration for me. I said, "Yeah, that brother is funky. He's got that heart, man. He's just, and you know, that was encouraging to me to let me know. Yeah, so I can do that too. I can let that out too." And then the guy that really knocked everybody out with this concept was Jaco Pastorius, the bass player for Weather Report.
Okay.
That was the player that kind of really got opened up my eyes to another world of how to play the electric bass, and especially the world of soloing. It really, really opened my mind up and my eyes up to that. So it gave me something to shoot for, and I'm gonna be forever grateful for that brother for that. And at that point, then other players, he just affected everybody. His playing affected everybody in the best way. And that's what I've been, I mean, I've been holding that in my heart ever since, and it's been helping me throughout my career. It's a joy. It's been a joy. It's really been a joy. And there are other players. There are a lot of players out there that are like that. Victor Wooten, who the world knows that brother as well. He's right there from my own hometown. He went, as a matter of fact, he went to school with my my baby brother. And I remember my baby brother when I was in the Army was telling me, "Have you heard of Victor Wooten?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, he's in the band here at the school." He said, "That brother's good." And I didn't realize it at that point who it was until he came out. So yeah, that brother is phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
You know, what a player. And it's just many, many of them out there that are like that. You know, you name it. And so I was just taking it in from everybody. You know, whoever they are, even listening to, the country players, listening to everybody, and the great players of all those genres, and how they approach it, and it helped me with my concept of each particular style, and that's been very beneficial for me through the years.
Excellent.
I can't believe I can't
what
believe
we're
gonna
do.
Mm-hmm.
What I was going to say is going to take a little break. What we're going to do right at this moment, Jess, is take a little 15-second break, and then we'll be right back, okay, to get a glass of water or something, okay?
Good. Good
so, ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back in 15 seconds.
Alright, let's get loose.
District.
Yeah.
That.
What up, y'all? Just came to your city to serve you
something.
What up?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Show me love.
Hop off the plane to a new show.
What up?
And all the shorties, they be waiting on me. Thugs packing they pistols. But ain't nobody aiming on me.
Not me.
Got a pocket full of fresh dough.
Dough, baby.
So you know I got a bacon, homie.
Bacon for me.
And I'm thankful. Whatever you want.
Hi, this is Andel Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star. And today, ladies and gentlemen, we have an expert in the playing of the bass guitar, Mr. Jesse Powers Jr., music educator, bassist, sound engineer, and leader of the band called Spice Band. Jesse?
Hello.
I'm going to read something the historians are saying about some of the bases that you were saying were out there from long, long ago. And this historian says as early as the late 17th century to the early 18th century. And they're saying whether used for its harmonic, rhythmic, or brute force capabilities, the bass guitar is both popular music's sexiest instrument and its most underappreciated. Some of the most influential and widely heard basses remain virtually faceless to the general public, while others are better known for their vocal or songwriting accomplishments than for their mastery of the playing the bass. And then when I did my research, I saw a lot, and I'm going to ask you what you think of that comment. And when I looked up, I went like, oh, wow, he's telling the truth. I mean, there's Larry Graham. Who heard of him? John Paul Jones. Mm. The one you just mentioned. You know him, Chico Pastorius. But some people, other than what you've just mentioned, maybe not even know him. What about, let's say, Paul McCartney? Everybody knows him, but he's not known mostly for playing the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And what about females? Some people don't even know Tina. I think her name is Weymouth. Weymouth?
Mm-hmm.
Of the Talking Head. She played the, and I went online and heard her, and she was good, even though it was in the country vein. So the bass is definitely more than just a guitar, with two fewer strings. It has a different tone, scaleless, feel, and musical role. And in many cases, it requires different conceptual technical guidelines. Not knowing anything, Jesse, can you give us a rundown on the basic construction and playing of this beautiful instrument? and some notable differences in the types of the bass instrument, if you can do that. You know, not getting too technical, but how many strings are, what types of basses are there? Is it, you know, just like some of the other instruments have alto sax, you know, soprano sax and that sort of thing. Double bass.
How do I approach? You got your double bass, or what we call sometimes upright bass, which is basically acoustic, and then you have your electric guitars as well, your electric bass, and you know, 4 strings and 5 string and 6 string, and now even 7 string, and that's even the 9 string, which is that's amazing. If you can find one, take a look at that thing. It's like a monster. But anyway,
what is yours? What do you play?
I play a 6-string.
Oh, I got an echo.
Oh, okay.
Is it gone? Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, I'm playing a 6-string. I went from 4-string to 6. I'm trying to remember why. I remember we were getting music in the field band, and I remember they were asking me here and there to do some solo work, and not necessarily that I definitely had it, but I thought it'd be a good idea to have an extra string for the range.
Right.
And then they were writing music that was below E, which on your typical bass is the lowest note, but then they were writing down to D, even lower than that. So I figured I would get a string that was on the top higher and one string on the bottom that was lower. I said, that's as far as I'm going to go. And I remember buying it, going to the store looking for it, because I was playing on Ibanez at the time, there are a lot of great sounding basses, so I can't really say which one, because it depends on the personal preferences of whoever's playing whatever instrument you got. What might be good for me, it might not be good for someone else. Mm-hmm. And again, a lot of it is playing with the bass is really not even in the instrument, but it's in the player himself. So I went on and picked up the 6-string, and I think it was like 2 weeks before I was going to go on tour, and I remember getting panicky because I wasn't making the transition too well from the 4 to the 6. I was feeling a little, you know, afraid because I had so much music in my head, and I had to sing and play at the same time too. So it was quite a big jump. But I remember taking it on tour anyway, and since the traditional strings are in the middle, I said, well, I'll just stay where I know until I get comfortable. And then finally, I grew into the instrument to the entire neck, and then after that, I was just always comfortable, and it was a great sound of bass. And the bass that I bought that I'm playing is a Ken Smith. It's a well-known...
Say it again.
Ken Smith.
Okay.
K-E-N Smith. And because when I went to the store to buy it, I didn't like the 6-string Ibanez, so I felt disappointed. So I said, I'm going to leave. But they wouldn't let me walk out the store. So, well, did you try all the bass? I said, yeah, I tried everything. They said, well, did you try the Ken Smith? So I tried that, and I sat down for about another half hour, 45 minutes. And I said, okay, I'll take this one. And that was really a good move. That instrument really grew on me, and I grew into it. So I've been very happy. I haven't had the need or urgency to change from that instrument since 1993. I'm still playing the same instrument.
Great. I started playing acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't sing, so I said, well, maybe if I can pluck the guitar, they won't notice anything. And I still had the guitar. And I said, well, maybe, because you know when my first love was Santana. But even though he played that electric, I said, well, I could always, you know, play something slow, and I like country. Didn't work, because I went back to the piano again. But just like you said, I think it's just like learning how to swim. That's how I learned how to swim. Somebody threw me in the pool in the 6-foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know I got out of there some kind of way. So that's another issue. Don't be afraid to challenge, and that's what you did. It was your passion, And when your passion is there, you're going to learn it. So that's another point for our audience to know. Don't be afraid to take on the challenge of something you love. Jesse, you have become a great bass guitarist. And like I said, I went online and listened to y'all play the several places that y'all have played, and it's just beautiful. And that comes through hard work and attention to development of your skills. How do you feel about what you have chosen? I would say it's that vocation. And how has it affected your life?
You said, how do I feel? Repeat that question again.
How do you feel that you have chosen this as your passion and your vocation?
Oh.
And how has it affected your life?
I feel good about it. I mean, you know, I feel wonderful. I've been retired since 05 from the military, and it's been music. And it's been other little jobs that I've had, too, while I was in, not only did I learn music, but I learned other things, too, to help me. But all of these things help encompass, you know, who I've become, I believe. And just to also, just to say to you, I mean, I appreciate the accolade of calling me an expert, but I don't look at myself, I'm still a student. I'm going to be a student until I can't
exactly.
be a student anymore.
I'm
very happy with it. I've gotten into learn so much about it, and, you know, learn how to put it together and learn how to arrange music early on. There's a lot of things that I was doing, just getting into it. I didn't realize how much it was going to benefit me down the road just from me being nosy, and, you know, for lack of a better word, or just being inquisitive about, you know, how this works, how that works. And that's how a lot of these great people are out here. A lot of these studio folks are like that. The great players out here that are like that. When people see me or hear a musician, they, and I guess it doesn't matter, even if it's not a musician, just when you see people, you just never know a person all the way in depth of what, you know, what their knowledge is. So you can always, you know, take something or learn something from almost anybody. You can learn something from folks that have been out there. So it's, and, you know, having that kind of an inquisitive mind will help you become who you're trying to be. But let me tell you one thing that you should also help you is, and I got to put that out there, because we all know the world is changing, but let me tell you, drugs is not it. Those things, you will not be able, whatever you are, could become, let's just say, it will thwart you. It will be in your way. It will be in your way. I know this because I've been around long enough to be able to say this. So my word to young folks is, don't go down that road. Whoever is offering that to you, they're not your friend. Keep your mind clear. Keep it as clear as you possibly can. Because the mind really is a beautiful, wonderful, wonderful thing. If you treat it right, it's going to treat you right. I just had to get that in there.
Oh, you're right. Because we, when I say we, I mean the people who love music, who love the passion in music that some of the people before us have brought to us and have now gone. I mean, and they were young. Some of it had to be, if we were to believe, painkillers, they say, but it's still an addiction, regardless. People who we loved, and I'm not going to name them, but we love them, we love their music, that has gone because, like you said, they took the drug road. And you can't do that. You got to make another detour. You're absolutely right. I ask all of my guests this question. We haven't got to that point. We still got a lot of questions to go. But since you interjected that, let me ask you, if you had to do things over, and I know you still got a long way to go, just what you just said, you are a student of life, so am I, and I'm an artist, and I'm still learning. Matter of fact, I'm getting ready to do some portraits now. But I'm still learning, and I look at a lot of videos about portrait painting still. If you had anything to do over, what would it be, if anything?
Huh. How about that?
You already said you love your life.
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, when I tell people, even that I'm, you know, like, because I joined the military during the Vietnam War. I mean, if you can, in fact, I think it was a shock even to the recruiter when I walked in his office, because I think everybody was running from that place. And
yeah.
I walked in and I said I wanted to join. And he looked at me and said, you're a boss here. I volunteered. He said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to play. I'm a musician. In fact, when I told my parents I was going to do, my mom, of course, she busted out in tears. She thought it was a horrible idea. And understandably so. You know, Vietnam was raging at that time, still raging back in 71. My father was also an Army musician, and so was his brother. So when I mentioned that, and I didn't even think about that.
Oh.
He told me, he said, well, you better play your horn if you're going to go in. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. And so I do that. And so I told a recruiter that, brought somebody down. So that, the long story short, even what seems like to be a disaster of a choice of paths to take, it turned out to be a blessing because when I volunteered, I don't think anybody knew to this day, maybe the people know now because time has passed and time you look back and reflect back. But if you had joined the military during the Vietnam, if you had volunteered instead of waiting for the draft and getting drafted, you would have had your station of choice for an entire year. You would go where you nobody knew that, and I didn't even know that. So he told me that in my contract. He said, so where do you want to go? I said, what do you mean? He said, where do you want to go? He said, you give a station of choice. That has to be in your contract. You volunteer. You weren't drafted. But and because I was living in Newport News and home was there, mom and dad is there, and Fort Eustis is there, and they had a band there. I said, well, how about Fort Eustis? So you got
it. Okay.
And that's where I went. So it seemed like every place that you would think there would be something I would need to do over again, it turned out to be a blessing.
A positive.
Blessing. Yeah, even Fort Polk, Louisiana, when I was coming from Hawaii, I might have shed a tear or two for having to leave Hawaii because I did not want to leave Hawaii. And people were teasing me because, oh, you're going to Fort Polk. They called it Little Vietnam. It was so bad. But I got down there, met the bandmaster was the coolest guy. And I walked in and he said, okay, you're out. And your reputation precedes you. We understand that you also not only play horns, but you play the bass guitar too. I said, yes, I do. And he said, well, can you sing Earth, Wind, and Fire? I said, absolutely.
Oh, wow. Good.
And that job turned out to be great. Everywhere I went, it just, and you know, from the perspective that I was at, the music was there. And as long as that music was there, the hardest thing, you can't do anything. You can't really do anything over. I really didn't make any mistakes like that where I would look back and go, oh, my gosh, man, I wish I had known. And I'm trying to think of what that could be in life anyway. But everything kind of worked out. You know, everything really, really worked out. Having a family worked out. Help me as a young man and keep me grounded. I got married back in 73. And, you know, even with all of its ups and downs, it just helped to ground me, you know, because I always had that in my mind. I'm responsible. I'm married. I got a wife now. And, you know, so everything that I do. And then when we had kids, definitely all that stuff was in my mind. And I think for most, it's not all young men. They think that way, and women too. When you have kids, it's very important. So you have to really refine your decisions when you're going to make a move. You know, keep all that in perspective. And again, drugs have no place in that. Nowhere in that scene. Nowhere in your life is going to get your way. So no, I'm sorry. I have nothing that I think I would do over. I'm walking around here in my studio now, looking and trying to think, but No,
no, you're fine.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying you're fine because of all the, I've done me doing this now 5.5 years, and 90% of the people said exactly what you said.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, there is one thing. Wait a minute. There is one thing.
Okay.
There was one point. Now, I'm speaking really, really hard for you, Andale. There was one point, a friend of mine, when we were at the School of Music, and I was going to the advanced music course.
Okay.
And my buddy came out. He told me, he said that, Jesse, let's go to Office of Candidate School. I remember that. And I was going to tell him, I said, I don't like that job. You know, because I thought that would take me, I would still be in music, but it would take me away from being the performing artist that I wanted to be.
Oh, okay.
And so I said, nah, I'm going to stick with this. And I remember he went on to become an officer. And he was a bass player, too. We were the two, I guess at that time, one or two of the leading players in the field. Because in 1979, I think it was, or 80, 1979, my bandmaster asked me to go to School of Music to give a clinic because that, even in 1979, there was still no job status. So you couldn't join the Army and say, I'm joining the Army as a bass player. You couldn't do it.
Oh,
there was no job.
Okay.
There was no job for it. So I said, so what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to come to the School of Music and I want you to give a clinic. And I said, give a clinic to who? He said, it's the Bandmasters Association. So that's all the bandmasters in the United States Army will be there. I said, what am I supposed to tell these people? He said, I want you to give a clinic on this instrument. Give a clinic on this instrument and tell them, show them and demonstrate to them the importance of having an electric-based military occupational status in the military.
I said,
so what am I going to say? I want you to go to school. You're going to be inside. The way it was, we were in an auditorium, and I was on stage by myself with this guitar and this bass amp, and I played a little bit. And then I just talked about the electric bass, and really they all knew it. I mean, because they were all asking people the way my earlier commander had asked me to learn how to play this instrument. They all were aware that there was no job status for that. So it just helped push this thing through. And from that job, the bandmaster from the Army Field Band in Washington, D.C. back in 1980, at that time, offered me a job. I remember that. He offered me a job. When I got back to Louisiana, my bandmaster was just ecstatic. He said, oh, my God, the bandmaster called. He said, he wants you to come and take an audition. And I refused to do it at the time because I said, that's the field band. That's the band that tours the world. I said, well, my children are too young for that right now. Can't do that. And he thought I was out of my mind. But I told him, I said, no. He said, you're not holding this for a black man? I know. I know. I said, my children are too young. They're too young for me to be away like that.
Family first. Right.
But they came back at me 6 years later. And I got a phone call, and they came back. And this time I'm stationed in Port Jackson, which was at that time, I think, in 1 year, I think we got the record of being the most worked band in the whole Army. We had more jobs than anybody. But it was good duty down there, and I had great musicians out there, so I was playing outside of the band. So when you're in the Army, you can also play out. You could do things on your own time. You do what you want to do. So, they called me and said, we want you to come and take an audition. And I told them, I said, well, that's not exactly protocol because I didn't ask it. You know, I have to apply for that. They said, we know you have to apply, but we're asking you to come and take an audition. I said, well, how do you even know who I am? And then he mentioned some people, officers that were there. I said, oh, yeah, well, I know him. And this other officer, I said, oh, yeah, well, I know him too. I told my wife that. I said, well, the kids are older now. I said, maybe this is a good idea. Maybe this is time for me to go and take an audition. So I did that, took the audition, and here I am. I'm still here in Maryland.
Okay, great. What we're going to do now is take another break, Jesse.
Okay.
And when we come back, I'm going to let you have the floor because there's another show right after this one. So what I want you to do after I introduce you is to tell us about the Fife Band and tell us any upcoming events that you have or whatever else you want to say regardless of whether we can get your music. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back in 15 seconds. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Wish Upon a Star. This is Andell Banks, your host, and today we are with the most wonderful jazz bassist, Jesse Powers Jr. He's a music educator, sound engineer, and leader of the Spice Band. So what I'm going to let him do now is to introduce you to the members of the Spice Band. Go ahead, Jesse.
Okay, of course, that's me. I'm the founder and bass player for the band, and one of the other original members that was with me from almost the inception of Spice is Johnny Jones Jr. Johnny Jones also played an instrument other than he's a drummer. He played the trombone as well as percussion when he was in school, and he studied under Charlie Pershiff and Freddie Watts and Carl Wolf, I think is his name. He's also played with Roy Ayers, like I have. Both of us have played with Roy, Gary Bartz, Ronnie Law, Dizzy Gillespie, and Mogul Miller. Johnny is one of those guys. Well, he's from New Jersey and well-spoken brother, a very good friend. And what I liked about him from often. From the beginning, well, that brother could really swing. I mean, he could swing. Man, he had it coming out of his ears. And then when it came time for us to switch from that style to maybe some R&B, he just would turn that switch like I said, yeah, this guy's all right. We can hang together. So he's been with us ever since. And I think he might have joined me back in like 88. Something like that. I think he was with me from the beginning when I put this band together when I moved here. And then we have Daoud Saeed. And by the way, it's a small group. It's big sounds come out of a small group. Daoud Saeed is one of those, a lot of people know of him, he's definitely another world-class player. And he's been out there with a plethora of people like Walter Beasley, Angela Bullfield, Najee, John Schofield, Kenny Lattimore, Michael Henderson, Michelle Indigello, the Grangers, Stacey Ladislaw, Marcus Johnson, it's on and on and on and on and on. And I knew of him because I was, and I still do run sound, but I met him running sound, he was playing with Art Sherrod. And I remember, you know, getting everybody together, and I remember thinking, I said, oh, that brother. I thought I could really play. Anyway, so we had this jam session was coming up, and I was trying to do this big thing at everybody's heard of this place called Club 347. I was pushed about having a jam session, and they wanted me to bring in different players every week, you know, different drummer and a different keyboard player. I said, well, that's going to be an arduous task, but let's at least get it started. And I was trying to get keyboard player, and the guy that I had gotten had backed out at the last minute. And so I'm just browbeat. I'm calling everybody. I don't want to mention much of name, but I just call everybody about, guys, come in here. I need you to come in here with me to do this thing and get this thing off the ground. And nobody wanted to do it because I guess the money wasn't right. And I understand that. But I called Dalu. I thought at the last minute, I said, well, I just ran sound for this brother, so maybe he'll help me out just to get me over the hump. And before I could even finish the sentence, the question, he was like, I'll do it. And he came in, and that was the first time he and I and Johnny had played together. And the owner of Club 347 heard us that first night, and he looked at me, he said, is this guy doing me with your band? I said, no, this is us the first time doing this thing together as a trio. He said, well, just keep it that way. And we've been playing together ever since.
Now, what instrument does he play, Sahi?
He's a keyboard player. Piano player. Keys. And so, and I had various other guys. That were with me, Alan Blackman. I met him down in Virginia Beach before Daoud. But Alan left the band. He was also a great player. I met him at a jazz concert there, and we met each other. That was before Daoud. And I remember at the show, I said, man, you really got good facility on that instrument. I said, what's your story? He said, well, I'm getting ready to go get my degree and get ready to move to Maryland and Towson. I had just got the job. I've got a job. I said, well, heck, man, that's where I'm at. I said, well, you look me up. So we played together for a while, too. And then I had Kirk Kadish, who was with the Army Field Band. And he finally got to the field band as we took him from the. Well, we didn't take
okay,
him.
Okay, Jesse. Okay,
yeah, you got to go.
We're running over time. So what I'm going to do is say thank you. So I know I can bring you back. We can come back again some other time. But now that I'm in this position, there's always shows right behind me. So I'm going to say thank you so much, and I'll bring you back maybe to talk more about the Spice Band, okay? Thank you so
Absolutely.
Much, and you can hang up now, and then I'll call you right back again. And we'll
okay.
All right, okay. Thanks so much, and signing off with Jesse Powell, Jr.